Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we bring you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. This is day two of Hawaii Public Radio's fall membership campaign. I'm Bert Lum. And during this special fall membership drive, we have Cliff Miyake. He's the Chief Strategy Officer at Ocean Networks. And they are the company contracted to build the Hawaiian Islands Fiber Link. And of course, during our broadcast, the phone lines are reserved for your show of support. We're looking for new members. So if you enjoy our weekly tech talks, we hope you'll consider supporting the great original and local programming here on Hawaii Public Radio. And of course, you can show your support by going to hawaiipublicradio.org or calling 888-536-4700 to become a member. But right now, I want to welcome Cliff to Bite Marks Cafe. Cliff, thanks for joining me.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on. And everyone listening, please call in and make a pledge and support this worthy, public radio station so that good content can continue to be brought to you.
Yeah, no, thanks. And appreciate your continued support, Cliff. Now, I've had you on before. You know, we've talked about inter-island fiber and the work that Ocean Networks does. And I just wanted to give people a chance to refresh their memory about what is the Hawaiian Islands Fiber Link project all about. So maybe you can give us a quick kind of overview.
Sure. So we are part of Connect Kako, or the Hawaii Broadband Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Our role in it, our part in it, is to build one of the two new submarine inter-island systems, or the middle mile, that are being put in. Our company has a system we are doing right now. We're not hyperspeed, but it's picking up pretty rapidly. We are building a system which will connect all the six main Hawaiian islands, 24 fiber pairs, 48 fiber count,
mm-hmm.
400 miles in length. Between all the islands, it's area neutral and open access, which means that any users who want to subscribe onto the system can, and carrier neutral is no one entity really controls it. It's being engineered and designed to have a technical life of about 25 years, but nowadays with the quality of the fiber you can get and with the right engineering and installation, the system should continue to work for much longer period. Our system, because of the length between the islands, the channel length segments in between are pretty short, and technically for what you can do with fiber, we can do what's called a repeaterless
mm-hmm.
or passive cable system. So we have no power on it. Basically, we just have the fiber pairs in the cable, lasers on the ends on each island, and just using light waves to transmit the bandwidth and the communication streams.
And the elements that your company is involved in building. You said the cable landings, and these cable landings are points on land where you go from sort of the wet plant or fiber that's coming in from the ocean and terminating it someplace on land. And that usually kind of takes place at the cable landing. Is that correct?
Well, so what we do is when we land onto each island, we create a cable landing point,
mm-hmm.
Which has been designed, and there were surveys done and looking at the best places to land the cable on each island. One of the things we took into account when we identified each site was to make sure that the cable landing points are brand new. It's not where any other cables landed before.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, when you put the new one in, you're bringing resiliency and redundancy to the network and to, how you bring a cable onto each island. At the shore side, what we do is we put a beach manhole in. The cable comes from the ocean into the manhole. Then we do a connection from the manhole. We take it over land with fiber to these cable landing stations that we're constructing on every island, in most of the islands.
And I think you can sort of think of a cable landing, as you described it, as like a little mini, like a mini data center, right? Because it has to have environmental controls, it has to have security, it has to have air and power, and so it's a actual place where the environment is well maintained.
At the cable landing station,
right.
Yes, yeah. So they're like essentially like mini data centers.
And then this is taking place on each of the islands, and I think one of the key factors of this new HIFL system is that it is a redundant, I mean, it is kind of a new system that helps to strengthen the connectivity between the islands. And maybe you can describe like what is in existence already. I mean, there are some very old systems, right? And I think and you can talk about some of the old ones. I think they're about 25 years old. And then there's a newer one, but it's still, I don't know, maybe 10 years old from a residual company from Sandwich Isles called Paniolo. So this system, HIFL, kind of provides really sort of future-proofing.
Yes. So what happened was the reason that the state really wanted to get a new system in place is the oldest system in operation, well, mostly in operation, is Hicks. Hawaiian Island cable system. And that one is about 34 years old, somewhere in that range. Yeah, and the design life, you know, being technical design life, especially when that was manufactured back in the day, was about 25 years. So you can tell that that's kind of a few years long in the teeth, right? So, and that's the oldest one. And then the next youngest one is Hawaii Island Fiber Network, or HIFN. And that one is, I think it is 29-30 years old now. So that one also is kind of getting, you know, up there in age. And then the newest is Paniolo. Paniolo will be, but when we complete and get our system active, Paniolo will be about in the 18-plus year age. So, you know, you can tell they're kind of getting there. So there was a concern that without the cables, you really can't have broadband or internet connectivity between the islands. And we've become so dependent on using the internet in our everyday life. Like your gas pumps at the gas station, your ATMs, cash registers in the market, you know, all of that stuff runs on internet protocol now. So it needs the broadband connectivity to be able to connect, and you be able to go to the ATM that connects back to the main branch, the main computer center of your bank, so they know how much money and if you can take your money out. And if the connectivity is gone, it may not work. And I think that did happen as recently as about 2-3 years ago. The island of Kauai, there was an outage on the systems connecting Kauai, and they lost the ability to do a lot for about a day.
And that is a story that's retold oftentimes, and I think that's where HIFL is a welcome addition to the infrastructure story here in Hawaii. I do want to give you a chance to talk about some of the actual contracts that you've awarded to start building. And so we want to kind of hold that thought. We'll be right back at the short break to continue our conversation with Cliff Miyake. He's a chief strategy officer at Ocean Networks. And of course, they're the company that's building the Hawaiian Islands fiber link. If you enjoy local programming on Hawaii Public Radio, you can show your support on our website at hawaiipublicradio.org, or you can call us at 888-536-4700. Now, let's check in with Campaign Central. We're back. We're live in the studio. This is Bite Marks Cafe on Hawaii Public Radio. This is the second day of the fall membership campaign. And, of course, you can visit our website at hawaiipublicradio.org or give us a call at 888-536-4700. And we're always looking for new members. So, you know, get on the phone and pledge your membership. If you are just joining us, we're talking to Cliff Miyake. He's the Chief Strategy Officer over at Ocean Networks. And they're the company contracted to build the Hawaiian Islands fiber link. And right before the break, Cliff, you were mentioning about the outage that took place basically on Kauai. And what happened was I forget which system actually got broke somewhere in the ocean that disconnected the entire island, which resulted in, you know, sort of an outage for the entire day, which I think it was both like internet access as well as phone service, right?
Yeah, a lot of phone service now is voice over IP related.
Mm-hmm, right,
so, yeah, right. When you lose the broadband connectivity, you can lose a lot of that capability as well. Also, you know, a lot of the cellular service, the connections back, the main switches are for the cell services on Oahu.
Mm-hmm,
so.
Mm-hmm.
It needs that connection from Kauai to Oahu to fully function correctly. And I guess when you lose that umbilical cord, you kind of get down. Yeah, it stops.
And so with the new system in place, I mean, now it's, the redundancy, there's alternatives. So the likelihood of cable going down, especially an old cable, would definitely keep people connected as a result of the new fiber that you guys are installing.
Yeah, the new fiber should add the resiliency that should minimize the risk of, you know, total outages going forward. Knock on wood, you know, nothing happens to ours and it will run well for many, many years.
Well, and I got to figure that whatever circuits are in operation now on some of those older systems would, I would imagine they want to transfer those over to the new system. So I think you definitely have an opportunity there. Now, you know, what was interesting of note, and I know, you know, prior to this interview, you and the company have been out to the various communities talking about the plan installation, and I think you guys did a pretty good job of doing a lot of kind of community engagement and information briefings, but most recently there have been some recent announcements, right, that you've awarded some of the contracts for the actual work. So, you know, prior to that it was a lot of information briefing. Now it's actually moving into a implementation phase, right?
Well, not quite implementation, but we're ramping up, getting ready for it. The reason we're not quite going towards implementation just yet is we are in our environmental assessment period.
Oh, okay.
Where we have to do a lot of studies, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. collect data and supply that to the approving agencies to review and approve. We should have a draft environmental assessment done September in next month. Then it'll go out for kind of the public has like a couple months to review the reports and stuff we publish and give us feedback. So that's upcoming. But in preparation to getting the goal we hope to get to, which is called a finding of no significant impact,
mm-hmm.
where all the studies you've done, archaeology, environmental, geotechnical, I mean, it's like a whole very long list of things you have to do. It all gets reviewed and gets approved, and it says, yeah, your cable is actually going to be beneficial and it's not going to damage the environment. You know, the work you're going to do is going to be done in the correct fashion, in compliance with all rules, regulations, and, you know, you've taken the steps to protect the environment in your planning, engineering, design. All those things have to come into play. And then once the reviewers are satisfied, you get what's called the FONSI, which mm-hmm. then allows you to actually go to file for the actual operational and construction permits to do everything. And in preparation for that, which should start happening in like early next year, where we go for those,
mm-hmm.
preparation of all that moving forward, we have to find the people who can build everything we need or supply what we need to build the system.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
With that said, we contracted, we put out the bid, and then we contracted a company called Prysmian,
mm-hmm.
And they are making the actual fiber. We also had to find a ship company that has ships. Cable ships are pretty specialized,
mm-hmm.
To do the work you need done. So we went out to bid for that, and we awarded that work to a company called International Telecom. They have a ship that's going to be available in the time frame we would need it when we're ready to, and we project out when we'll probably be ready to put the cable in the water. And they're also a company that can go to where the cable manufacturing plant is, get the cable, and bring it to Hawaii for us. So what happened was when we put out the bid, there was a question someone asked in the national press, mm-hmm. to us about why were the companies we selected not U.S.-based. So what happened there was, part of the funding for the system is via the U.S. Treasury,
mm-hmm.
Department,
all right.
grant to the state of Hawaii. And because of that, we have to be very careful how we spend the money. And we have a large fiduciary responsibility to do the right thing. So we have to look at the cost, get the most economical cost for the highest quality cable that can be produced in the timeline needed. So there's a lot of variables and things that affected the selection. Same thing with the ship. We had to find a ship that was capable and a company that's capable. Also a company that's done work in Hawaii before, that's familiar with Hawaiian islands and the channels and the biology and the flora, fauna, and they know how to protect our environment. That was important to us. So that's why we ended up with International Telecom. They're based out of Halifax. They had a ship that fits the timeline at the right price point. And Prysmian, the factory is actually in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, what they say about German engineering and quality and all of those standards, it's kind of true. And International Telecom had the ship that could sail to Germany, upload the cable, bring it across the Atlantic, bring it to the Panama Canal, and bring it to Hawaii, all within our budget and at the times we need it. Right now, the global outlook for the subsea cable market is it's very active. There's so many new systems being built around the world. It's very hard to get a ship. All the ships are booked, so it's hard to identify who has a ship, especially when you need it. Also, the factories are all running at full tilt, producing fiber optic cable. So then again, we have to really dig, and find the right company with the right fit at the right price point, of course, that can get this done. And that's where we ended up with those companies.
Well, the timing now is really critical, because as you describe, going from the studies and now getting the approvals and then actually scheduling the ship and the manufacturing of the fiber. I mean, these all have to come in it's a pretty tight schedule. And I think the goal is to get it completed, in the year of 2026. So definitely looking forward to that. Hey, Cliff, I want to thank you for joining us. Cliff Miyake is the Chief Strategy Officer over at Ocean Networks, and they're the company that is building the Hawaiian Islands fiber link. Cliff, thanks for joining me today.
You're welcome, Bert. Thanks.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll find out about digital resilience. In the meantime, don't go away. If you enjoy local programming like Bite Marks Cafe on Hawaii Public Radio, you can show your support by going to hawaiipublicradio.org or calling us at 888-536-4700. Now, let's check in with our friends over at Campaign Central.